The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I gotta say, man, this has probably been one of the best seasons of football to watch so far. I mean, there's been so much parity, and I mean, you cannot pinpoint one team right now where you're like, oh, that's the front runner for the Super Bowl. Usually you can look at a team and be like, ah, this looks like the team that's gonna roll through everybody. And so far, there has really not been one team you can look to who is dominating in every way, shape, or form. That everybody's got like a weakness. Everybody's been losing weird games. I mean, hell, we don't even have an undefeated team at this point in the season. And that it usually there is an undefeated team until about week 10, week 11. Like we always have one team that's always lingering at some point in the season undefeated. And right now nobody's undefeated. So it's crazy to see the parity. And yesterday's display of football, man, we had so many close games. So let's get right into it. We had another London matchup, and this one was really close. I actually expected it to be a lot more of an ass-kicking, but this is football. And these were two solid defenses going up against each other between the Denver Broncos and the New York Jets. And they really just took it to each other. Not one of these teams really. At first, it looked like it was going to be all Broncos. But then the Jets really just turned it on in the second quarter. And they were able to hang in there, but they weren't able to get over the hump. I mean, the Jets' offense was exceptionally ineffective yesterday. That was one of the worst displays of offensive football you will ever see. It was that bad. The Broncos, on the other hand, it wasn't, you know, of course their offense didn't look that great either since they only got 13 points on the board. But the Jets were just garbage. So the Broncos did get the win 13-11. Very odd score there. But it was just, that's just a defensive game you get sometimes. And it was a headbanger between two really solid defenses. And the Jets are 0-6 on the season. So there's that. Then we had the Cleveland Browns at the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, they just keep on winning. They got the win 23-9. The Browns look terrible, as they normally do. I mean, on the defensive side of the ball, this team looks really solid. It's just offensively, they can't get anything going. And they are just, ugh. It's odd that the Jets are worse than them because it's like, woo, the Browns are just garbage. But the Steelers, on the other hand, defensively really good. Offensively holding it down. I mean, they did have a very solid day. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, 21 for 30, 235 yards, two touchdowns. Warren on the ground, 52 yards. DK Metcalf through the air, 95 yards and a touchdown. So they got the win 23-9, and they only have one loss on the season. The Steelers are 4-1. They're owning the AFC North right now. And it's like I said, man, Aaron Rodgers, you just put him right in there, and he has completely turned this offense around. I mean, the defense, zero issues with this Pittsburgh Steelers defense. They just at least needed a tiny spark on offense, and that is what Aaron Rodgers has provided them so far this season. And the Steelers keep on rolling. Then we had the Dallas Cowboys at the Carolina Panthers, and I have been saying this all season about the Panthers since my NFL preseason predictions. I have been saying this is what the Panthers are going to be. They are going to keep it close because they are a young, scrappy team, and they're going to get random wins like they did over my Cowboys yesterday, or they're going to get these really close games where they just lose or they just have these terrible mistakes or whatever. That's just kind of how I view the Panthers, and that's what they did yesterday. They really kept in it. They got the win 30-27. Their defensive line really... they took out one of the most effective things about the Cowboys' offense. Now, I will say, I feel bad for Dak Prescott and George Pickens because the both of them balled out yesterday. They did their jobs. They had no issues. Prescott, 25 for 34, 261 yards and three touchdowns. The dude is on fire. George Pickens, 168 yards and a touchdown. He killed it. But their Javonte Williams, he's been their he's been their workhorse, and he's been killing it every single game so far. It's just the Panthers' defensive line took care of business yesterday and did not let him get out. So that took the Cowboys out the field early in on a couple of drives. Then on the defensive side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball, man, they were doing some amazing blocking on that Carolina Panthers offensive line. They were just opening up some gaps for Rico Dowdle, who had 183 yards on the ground, had a total of, I think, 217 yards. He had over 200 yards yesterday. When you combined his rushing and receiving yards yesterday, he had well over 200 yards. He went and had a day against his old team, the Cowboys. But, just defensively, the Cowboys got manhandled. This Carolina Panthers offensive line just was pushing them around. Dowdle was able to just run over them all day long. The Panthers, they just kept in it. They just kept in it. And then on the last drive of the game, there was about 6 minutes left to go when they had the ball. They literally just drove all the way down the field, and Dowdle basically the entire way on this drive, took all the clock down, made the Cowboys take their last couple of timeouts, and they just walked it off with a real close field goal. So this is not surprising to me with the Carolina Panthers, even though, of course, I picked my Cowboys to kick their ass, but I'm a fucking homer. But the Panthers, I am not shocked by them being this type of team. I expected them to be this type of team, and I feel like they're a veteran or two away from being an actual legit squad who could compete in the playoffs. But right now, this year, they're definitely a young, scrappy team, and that was a good-ass win from the Carolina Panthers yesterday. Then we had the Arizona Cardinals at the Indianapolis Colts, and this actually turned out to be a very exciting game. First of all, Jacoby Brissett, this guy has been the journeyman backup quarterback for the last, 5 years. He was a backup in Indianapolis, actually, you know, came right in and actually had a pretty decent couple of years with the Colts, but, you know, he's moved on, and now he is backing up Kyler Murray in Arizona. And actually, last minute, they basically said Murray was not going to play. I think it was Saturday-ish. They were saying that it was looking like he's not going to play. And then Sunday it became official and Brissett got the start. He actually had a solid day, 27 for 44, 320 yards and 2 touchdowns against his old team. But I'm telling you, it's all about Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor, if this dude just does what he do, this Colts team gets the win. He had 123 yards on the ground and a touchdown. And what did they do? They got the win 31-27. And don't get me wrong, Daniel Jones is holding it down. But to me, it is all about Jonathan Taylor. It's just now they finally have a quarterback who's at least just capable. He doesn't have to be the greatest dude on the field, but he's dropping dimes and he's making the big plays when he has to. But Jonathan Taylor is the workhorse, and the Colts got the win in a back and forth affair, 31-27. It was like boom, 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 boom. You had no idea who was walking away with this win, but the Colts got the win. Then another crazy game between the Los Angeles Chargers and the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins looked like they were actually going to win this one. It looked like the Chargers were going to kind of just take off, get the win, run away with it. And then in the fourth quarter, the Dolphins just turned it on, and they actually had the lead. But Justin Herbert made one of the biggest plays of his career, in which he's about to be sacked, and he just magically just gets out of the sack. He passes the ball to Ladd McConkey, and they only have 20-something seconds left on the clock. So McConkey not only has to catch this ball, dude's got to get out of bounds. He's able to get a real nice chunk play. I think he got about 20, 30 yards on the play, puts them in field goal position, and they're able to walk it off and get the win 29-27. Justin Herbert went 29 for 38, 264 yards, 2 touchdowns, and McConkey had 100 yards and a touchdown. Achan on the other side of the ball for the Dolphins, he had 128 yards and 2 touchdowns, but Tua had 3 interceptions, and I think he regrets what he said at the podium yesterday, because he was... he was pointing fingers at other dudes on the team and not accepting responsibility for his three interceptions he had on the board. Yes, I think there was one or two interceptions that bounced off the hands of his receivers, but still at the end of the day, you know, Dak Prescott, I said he had an amazing game yesterday, but he had the loss, and guess what? He took responsibility, even though Prescott had basically a perfect game yesterday, he still took responsibility for the loss. It's just when you're a quarterback, you have to take responsibility in every win, in every loss, and in every way. And him calling out his dudes, it's kind of, to me, looking like with Tua, he's going to be the next Russell Wilson. Because with Russell Wilson, I've noticed most of his the dudes who used to play with Russell Wilson have nothing good to say about Russell Wilson. Most of his ex-teammates don't like him. Most of him don't have respect for him. And I think that's kind of why Russell Wilson has ended up where he's at now. And I think that's the same thing with Tua, is there aren't a lot of dudes in his locker room sticking up for him. As a matter of fact, it's been the exact opposite. And then he goes to the podium, calls out guys for not showing up to meetings, and he threw three interceptions and took no responsibility for that. So, and who knows, maybe that's the way the media clipped it, and that's the way I'm seeing it. But just in my personal opinion, when you're the quarterback, you just always have to take the good with the bad and the bad with the good. It all is on your shoulders. Whether you like it or not, it's just when you sign up to be a quarterback in any level, you are the leader, and that's who everybody looks to. And especially when you throw three interceptions, you got to take responsibility for those three interceptions because you cost your team on three drives right there. Then we had the New England Patriots at the New Orleans Saints, and man, Drake May is looking like that dude for the Patriots. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Saints team is not blowing anybody out of the water, but May, he was really delivering. He's been having a very solid season, but he really was delivering it in this game. He went 18 for 26, 261 yards and three touchdowns, and really just was annihilating the Saints defense. The Patriots got the win 25-19. And it was relatively close game, but I mean, the Patriots just pretty much dominated this one, as they should. But like I said, Drake May is looking like he's that dude for the New England Patriots. Then we had the Seattle Seahawks at the Jacksonville Jaguars, and this was all Seahawks all day. I mean, the Jaguars really did not have a shot at all. They scored 6 points in the first quarter and 6 points in the fourth quarter, and that was it. Other than that, Darnold went 16 for 27, 295 yards and two touchdowns. Jackson Smith and Jigba had 162 yards in a touchdown. So obviously this is a combo that is working for the Seattle Seahawks in a 20-12 win over the Jaguars. Big win too. It's on the road. And the Jaguars, like I said, their defense has been one of the best defenses in the league, hands down. And the Seahawks really made it look like no issue yesterday. And also their defense really, really took care of business. Like I keep saying about this Jaguars offense, they've got some work to do on the offensive side of the ball, and that you can see that they kind of get stuck in the mud at certain points in time, and especially when they face off against a really solid defense like the Seahawks, it did not look good for them. So they've got some work to do on offense, but still, defensively, they look real solid, but this was a good win for the Seattle Seahawks. Then we had the Los Angeles Rams at the Baltimore Ravens, and, you know, the Rams did what they were supposed to do because no Lamar Jackson again yesterday, so that usually means the Ravens are not going to get the win, which they did not. It actually was a very weird game to start, very slow-moving game in the first half, but then the Rams turned it on, scored 14 points in the third quarter, and walked away with the win 17-3. Matthew Stafford went 17 for 26, 181 yards and a touchdown. And this was a weird, weird play-calling game from the Ravens. I get it. Lamar Jackson ain't in the game. But there was a goal line stand where you would think you would just hand the ball off to Derrick Henry, and they didn't. And it was a very... This Ravens season is obviously just falling apart at the seams. There, like I said, to start this off, there isn't a front runner yet, but there are a few teams that you just look at and go, whoa, what is going on here? Dolphins, like I said, that's one of the teams. And the Ravens are another team, because the Ravens are different than the Dolphins, because the Ravens at least have, they legit have one of the most talented rosters top to bottom. When you just look at them position by position, they have Lamar Jackson, an MVP quarterback. They have Zay Flowers, an excellent receiver. They have They have Hopkins, a solid veteran receiver. They have Derrick Henry, arguably the best running back in the league. And then their offensive line is just one of the best offensive lines in the league. But defensively, this is not the Ravens of old. That's a huge issue for them. But there's just a lot of issues with this Ravens team, and it just looks like they're falling apart each and every week. And I don't even know if a healthy Lamar Jackson is going to save this season. It's a long way. There's a long way to go. And with the way this season has started, I think anything can happen by the end of the season. I mean, we're only a quarter of a way through the season. So it's like there's anything can happen. But if it just really, really feels like this Ravens team is falling apart, and I don't know what's going to save them. Then we had the Tennessee Titans at the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Raiders finally got themselves a win, their second win on the season. They got the win 20-10. But Ashton Jeanty, solid day, 75 yards, a touchdown. Really, actually, just an overall solid day from the Raiders. But the Titans had such a bad day that they fired their coach this morning. You know, I thought it was going to be Brian Daboll as the first coach fired this year. I still think he's definitely on the hot seat for 100%. But the Titans, I think there's a reason why you suck. I mean, I thought it was dumb that they got rid of Vrabel a couple years ago. I mean, I thought that dude was taking this team in the right direction. But they didn't think so, so they replaced him. And now we've got Callahan in. And now I will say, Callahan has had some follies. There's been there was one game this season where he actually wasn't aware of a rule. I can't remember what exactly happened, but like he straight up didn't even know a rule in the game. So that's pretty bad when the coach doesn't know that. And it's just the offense has been very awful, and it just kind of feels like nobody has any respect for him, at least as far as what the players are saying. So it probably was a good move, but at the same time, I'm always like, dude, it is his second, like two seasons in, and you've already fired this dude. I kind of feel like that's a fucking pattern. Like, you might want to actually let a guy sink in. I mean, Cam Ward was the number one overall pick, and you knew that this season was not going to be a good one. You can't expect to have the number one overall pick last year, have this terrible-ass roster that you had this year, and actually be good. I mean, real talk, they're lucky they got the one win they got. They got that one win because of luck against the Arizona Cardinals a couple weeks ago, which is some random-ass fumble in the end zone. But other than that, it's just like you couldn't have expected that you were going to be playoff-bound this year. But I don't know what's going on in Tennessee, but they definitely fired their coach. They haven't named an interim coach just yet. But that is the first casualty of the season for the head coaching realms. But Titans, we'll see what happens with them. I'm not expecting any miracles, no matter who is their replacement coach. But yeah, that's how bad that season's been for them. Then we had the Cincinnati Bengals at the Green Bay Packers. And the Bengals actually stayed in this one. You can see that Joe Flacco, even though he's 95 years old, he made some plays yesterday. He's already got a nice little connection with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. So I'm sure those two guys are real excited to at least have a capable quarterback of getting them the ball and making big plays, because Ja'Marr had a huge, huge touchdown yesterday. It was a typical Ja'Marr touchdown. So at least they now have a capable quarterback to at least keep them in some of these games. And they kept in this game yesterday. I mean, this was not a runaway by the Packers by no means. Now, but every time the Bengals got close, the Packers did start to run away, and they did get the win 27-18. Jordan Love, solid day, 19 for 26, 259 yards and a touchdown. Josh Jacobs, 93 yards and two touchdowns. And like I said, Ja'Marr Chase, 94 yards and a touchdown. So trading for Flacco might help them out. We'll see. But I mean, Flacco is that dude. He's actually proven he could just step right in and at least make you some plays. And when you have Ja'Marr and T. Higgins, those are some really solid weapons. Then we had the San Francisco 49ers at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I've been saying this, especially since last year, but I'm going to say it again. I fucking love Baker Mayfield. I can't believe I'm saying it every week. I fucking love Baker Mayfield. This guy is so much fun to watch. So much fun to watch. I look forward to watching Baker Mayfield play. Like, I'm pissed off if I don't get a Tampa Bay game on TV. And I was stoked we had yesterday's game. I assumed we would because it was against the Niners, and that's a good game right there. But I was stoked we had this game because I love watching Baker Mayfield. I love every fucking thing about Baker Mayfield. As a matter of fact, I am super close. Super, super, super close to buying a Baker Mayfield jersey. That's how much I love Baker Mayfield right now. And this dude had yet another phenomenal fucking day in which he's missing three of his top receivers. No Evans to start, no Godwin to start, and then Ekpuga got hurt in the second quarter, I believe, second or third quarter, midway through the game. He was out of the game. Missing his first string running back, and I think a couple of offensive linemen, too. Defense held it down as well. That Tampa Bay defense is real good. I mean, they had Mac Jones on his ass, throwing interceptions. Just, this was a great game overall from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They got the win 30-19. Motherfucking play of the game, though, is from the one and only Baker, motherfucking Mayfield. 3rd and 14. He looks like he's about to get sacked. He gets out of the sack and just runs. Just takes off. Now, he gets grabbed by the defender about 2-3 yards away from the first down marker. Baker just rolls, trucks through this dude, reaches, gets the first down, and I kid you not, I am jumping up and down. I am yelling in the TV. That is Baker motherfucking Mayfield, y'all. I am loving everything about Baker Mayfield. I would love to see the Bucs actually make a Super Bowl run this year, just simply because this guy, he's just fantastic to watch, and he's so excellent for the sport, and I'm actually very happy for him that he took so much criticism when he was with the Browns. Everybody wanted to act like he was just this big old dick and he's not a team player and shit. And it's just like, nah, man, do you not see this? And I've always been familiar with Baker Mayfield. I'm from Austin, Texas. So he actually was a big deal here because he's from Austin. He was a big deal here in high school football. And then he went to OU, and I'm a Texas Longhorns fan, so I'm very familiar with what goes on with OU. Them losing this weekend to my Longhorns, by the way. Ha ha! That's besides the point. But I was well aware of who Baker Mayfield is as a player. I always thought he was that scrappy dude who just did not give a fuck. He has a great arm. He just is so fun to watch. And then when he went to Cleveland, I was like, ugh, that's not a good way to go. You also just never know how somebody's career is going to go. And he just took so much flack because, just like I said, everybody thought because he's a confident dude that he's a dick. And he even said it this past week, I believe, that everybody used to look at him as just a dumb young kid and he was a dick and he was stuck up and blah, blah, blah. Now he's got moxie and he's a leader and blah. And they change all the narrative on him now. Now, like I said, it's hard not to root for him. It really is. I've been watching him for many years, and it's just hard not to, like, be excited about. He makes me want to suit up and take on big-ass fucking 6'8" dudes and run right into him. Like, that's literally how I feel when I'm watching a game. So I can't even imagine how his teammates feel about him. Like, it must be so much fun as a football player to play with Baker Mayfield. And that's what I'm saying. And I'm sorry. I know some people don't like when you wax poetic on certain players. But for me personally, I am a Dallas Cowboys fan through and through. But when I find players who I just love and they make me excited about football, I can't not talk about them. And I can't not get excited about them. And when they're playing at the level Baker's playing right now, I want him to win a Super Bowl. I just am so rooting for it, unless they're playing the Cowboys, of course. If they're in the NFC Championship game against the Cowboys, you know I'm rooting for them, but I will not be upset if I see Baker Mayfield in a Super Bowl. That's for damn sure. Then our Sunday Night Football matchup was between the Detroit Lions and the Kansas City Chiefs, and gotta say, Lions laid an egg last night. The Chiefs showed up, and the Chiefs actually, offensively, they were basically the same old Chiefs. Defensively, they were the same old Chiefs. They pretty much played the same old Chiefs game. The Lions, I don't know what was up with them. Like, at first, it looked like they were going to, you know, be typical Lions, score some touchdowns here, but they were cold whole game. Patrick Mahomes was not. He went 22 for 30, 257 yards and three touchdowns. Also had a rushing touchdown as well. Chiefs got the win 30-17. But just overall domination by the Chiefs. And just, I mean, obviously to me personally, this is not like a bad game from the Lions. The Lions are still a damn good team. Defensively, I do think they have some questions because now the injuries are starting to pile up. And they were having some issues. Now, obviously, everybody's going to have issues trying to stop Patrick Mahomes for sure. But it's just in the red zone, they weren't really effective. They were getting blown up in a lot of plays, and it just was not a good defensive showing at all from the Lions. And then they had that big blow up between Branch and Juju Smith-Schuster at the end of the game. As a matter of fact, it started with Mahomes. You know, Mahomes just go. It's the end of the game. Whistle's blown. Mahomes walks up to Branch to give him a high five, like, yo, good game. Branch just walks by him and kind of like shoulder taps him. And Juju didn't like that. And then Juju kind of just gets in his face and they both get in each other's face. And then Branch, he doesn't punch him, but he open hand hit him in the face and bloodied up his face. It might have broken his nose or something. Regardless, I kind of have a feeling Brian Branch is going to be suspended here pretty soon just because that's not the way you act after a game. Even though when you do watch the tape, Brian Branch actually had some reasons to be pissed off. I mean, there was a couple of blocks where, like, he got blown up. Like, he's standing there, and Juju Smith-Schuster literally blows him up while he's behind him. Juju's behind Branch and pushes him in the back and completely knocks him on the ground. So his frustrations, I could see where they came from. But at the same time, this is after the whistles blow, and it's just like, dude, come on. This is it. You got to... Once the whistles blow, you can only take that out on the field. Quarter one through four, that's when you take it out on the field. But once those whistles blow, it's all done. It's all over with. And, hey, if you're upset by Patrick Mahomes scoring or by whatever they do to you, how about you stop them? That's the way I view it. But we'll see what happens there. But I'm expecting definitely some fines. But there should probably be a suspension, at least on Branch's part. All right, we once again have two Monday night football games tonight. One, probably a barn burner. The other should probably be a good game. The first one, we have the Buffalo Bills at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Bills are a 4.5-point favorite. And Atlanta has just been a weird team. They've had a couple of games where they've scored a lot of points. But for the most part, they are just getting blown up. And Buffalo, they're coming off of that weird loss last week. So I'm kind of expecting the Buffalo Bills to really just come out strong tonight. Really have no issues. I think they're going to take care of business offensively, defensively, and in all phases of the game. I've got the Buffalo Bills winning 41-7. And also the homie Simon Aruvalcaba has the Buffalo Bills winning 27-20. And in my head-to-head matchups, as a matter of fact, with Simon, we only had two different picks this week. One being the Panthers and Cowboys game. And I mean, we both had to choose because he's a Panthers fan and I'm a Cowboys fan. So we both had to choose our own teams. And hey, Simon won that one. So he actually went ahead. He went 10-3 this week. I went 9-4. So he's one game now ahead. We were tied in this week. But our other pick we have that is a different pick is the other Monday night game between the Chicago Bears and the Washington Commanders. Right now, the Commanders are a 4.5-point favorite. Chicago's coming off of a bye. Washington's coming off of this close win against the Chargers. Daniels, you know, he came back last week off of his injury, so they should look pretty solid on the offensive side of the ball. And defensively, it's been a very weird year, in my opinion, from Washington. It doesn't look like a typical Dan Quinn defense. They're not terrible. It's just like a very odd defense to me. They're just not as aggressive towards the quarterback, if you will, or at least getting at the quarterback like they normally do. But even so, I think they're a better team than Chicago. Chicago still has a lot of work to do on the offensive side of the ball, especially. I still don't think they have a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball. And I just think Washington's slightly better, so I'm going to go with them because they're at home as well. I've got Washington winning 23-20, and Simon has Chicago winning 28-24. All right, moving on to baseball. Shit, man. I'm not going to talk about the last couple of wild card games we had over the weekend. The last couple of division series games we had over the weekend. But there was one that went 15 fucking innings. Holy crap. That was nuts. That was so nuts that the Mariners game went 15 innings. I actually had to, I didn't make it past inning 11, as a matter of fact. After inning 11, it went to 12. I'm like, dude, and you could just tell kind of how it was going because both teams were just pitching so hard and nobody could get on base and nobody could score. And even when they did get on base, it's just like they'd hit into a double play. It was just one of the most crazy, insane games ever. And I keep reiterating when it comes to baseball playoffs, I love the baseball playoffs because everything changes on a dime. It looks like, you know, it could be just one of those battles where it's tied 1-1, 1-1, and then all of a sudden somebody just busts out and that's it, you know. So I love playoff baseball and we have had some great games. So now here we are into the ALCS and the NLCS. Game one between the Seattle Mariners and the Toronto Blue Jays took place last night, and the Mariners took game one in Toronto, 3-1. Cal Raleigh came up big with a home run, which took the lead. They were tied at one, and then Raleigh came up to bat and boom, knocked it out. And the Mariners were able to hang on. Miller pitched a beautiful gem for the Mariners. And it was just a battle between two solid-ass teams. Game two was tonight. We've got Seattle up 1-0 on Toronto. I don't expect Toronto to be that silent, but gotta say, man, Seattle is playing excellent team baseball. That's why they keep winning. And while I think Toronto is the better overall team, Seattle's play, they just are playing with that special magic that just like happens sometimes with playoff teams where you could just look at them. And they've been playing great the second half of the season. Then they took over their own division, and then they made the playoffs, and here they are. And then they went that 15 innings, and it's just kind of feeling like the Mariners might be that magic team this year. And I was leaning towards Toronto in this one just because I think Toronto is the better team overall. I think they have the better roster. I think they have the better players. I think they are so much more potent offensively. I think they have a much deeper starting pitching rotation. But there's something about this Mariners team. And so I'm actually leaning towards the Mariners in this ALCS. I'm going to take the Mariners in six. But, and especially because they took last night's game. That was huge. But this Toronto Blue Jays, did I call them the Raptors? I think I just called them the Raptors. Well, maybe, regardless, Toronto Blue Jays, they're a good-ass team, but I think Seattle stunned them, and I just feel like Seattle's got it. So I got Seattle winning this series in six games, but game two is tonight, and that Seattle is up 1-0. Then NLCS game one is also tonight between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Milwaukee Brewers. Very pissed off that I'm still talking about these stupid-ass Dodgers, but that's what happens when you have such a great goddamn roster as they do. They're going to still be in it, and they are unfortunately still in it, at least on my from my point of view. I'm sure there's tons of Dodgers fans real fucking excited about your stupid Dodgers being in the NLCS for the 95th year in a row. Jesus Christ, can anybody stop them? I mean, seriously, can anybody stop them? And I'd like to think the Brewers are going to be a team that could stop them because the Brewers actually played the Dodgers really well. I mean, they swept them not too long ago in the regular season. I think it was like the last week of the season. They swept them right out. So it's not like the Brewers aren't capable of beating the Dodgers. I mean, come on, y'all. The Dodgers in the wild card series obliterated the Reds. And then in the NLDS, they obliterated, who did they even face? That's how bad they obliterated them. I fucking forgot who the Dodgers even faced because it doesn't even matter who they faced. You know why? Because here they still fucking are. And you know what I think they're going to do to the Brewers? I think they're going to obliterate the Brewers, too. As a matter of fact, I'm taking the Dodgers in this stupid series in five games because I just see it now. I'm going to be stuck with another Dodgers World Series. And with my predictions, I've got it faced off Mariners versus the Dodgers. And while I think the Mariners are the magic little team, the Dodgers are the legit real fucking team. They've got the great roster. They've got the great players. And they're all healthy right now, too. So, oh, yay. Sounds like another fucking World Series win for the Dodgers. But thankfully, we have a series for a reason. So, come on, Brewers. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. I doubt you will, but prove me wrong. I mean, they really do. They are a good team. The Brewers are a good team. They've got the potential to do it, but I just see it. Just the way the Dodgers have played in the postseason, they're so unstoppable. Who's stopping them? Not the fucking Brewers. So I have the Dodgers winning in five. All right, moving on to my NBA season predictions. And today we're going to do the Southwest and the Central divisions. And, I think I've got one team in here that I think is going to do pretty well, surprisingly. And then I have a couple other teams that that have been here and yada, yada, yada. I think there's another team as well who added exactly what they needed to get over the hump. So let's start off with the Southwest division and who I think is going to win that division. I've got the Houston Rockets winning this division. And this is the team I was just saying. They're one missing piece. They picked him up. His name is Kevin Durant. I know a lot of y'all have some salty feelings about Kevin Durant. I am not one of those people. I am a Kevin Durant fan. Love Kevin Durant. I will sing it to the top of the rooftops. I love you, Kevin Durant. Hook 'em horns, motherfucker. I love him on every team he is on, and I don't give a shit. I think a lot of the reason why he gets a bad rap is because everybody wanted to compare him to LeBron, and it's like, stop comparing him to LeBron James. Their games are not even the same, and not everybody has to be LeBron or Michael Jordan or this, that, or the other. Kevin Durant is just Kevin motherfucking Durant, and the dude can shoot, and the dude can score, and he is exactly the veteran presence that this Houston Rockets team is missing. They have been a team that's on the precipice. They've been rising. To me, they are exactly like the Oklahoma City Thunder. Oklahoma City Thunder, before they won the championship last year, the two seasons before, they were building. They were getting closer. They were getting closer. They were on win streaks, and then they couldn't get there, and then they won the championship. And that's how I view this Houston Rockets team. They were getting closer. They're getting closer. This past year, it looked like they could be a legit team, and they fell short. And to me, all season long, I was saying they just need like one veteran. They just need that one solid dude who's going to keep them in line, who's going to make the big plays and the big moments, who's just going to give them the advice that they need at the right time or just whatever. KD is that dude. And this is exactly what he's going to fit in well. And I think the Rockets are probably going to be one of the top teams in the Western Conference and in the NBA, not only because of him, but I mean, now let's get to the actual roster. Şengün, who had an amazing season yet last year. Adams, who's going to be great in the paint and help them out in that regard. And this team was the best team in the paint last year, by the way. Then you've got Eason, Amen Thompson. Like, this is a very, very legit squad who was in it all season last year. And like I said, just missing the veteran presence. KD brings them that veteran presence. And I think the Houston Rockets are going to be one of the top teams in the league this year. Finishing in second place in the Southwest Division, I have the San Antonio Spurs. I think this is a team that's going to start off slow. I don't think they're going to overpower anybody. I think they're going to grow as the season moves along. Also because De'Aaron Fox is starting the season off on the injured reserve. So once they get him back, I think they're already going to kind of have a little bit of, you could tell they're a team that is starting to gel. It's just, they just need experience. I mean, there are a lot of young dudes on this. I expect Wemby to take a step forward. I expect Sochan to take a step forward. But like I said, once they get Fox back, I feel like that's when they're really going to start getting it moving. And I think, like I said, I think the Spurs are going to be a second half team. They're going to start out slow. Then the All-Star break's going to happen, and then boom, we're going to be talking about the Spurs. And don't be shocked if they make a nice little run to get into the playoffs. Finishing in third in the Southwest Division, I have the Dallas Mavericks. Cooper Flagg, they did draft him, so they lucked out there, but he is a rookie. So I'm not expecting miracles from a rookie. Kyrie is injured. He's probably not going to be available until the second half of the season. I think the last I read was around January, February. So they've got a while until Kyrie is back. AD has apparently been eating his feelings this offseason because that guy rolled into training camp fat as fuck. I have never seen AD look this fat, so he must be pretty depressed about getting traded to the Dallas Mavericks. And then they've got Klay Thompson. Very solid dude who's probably going to be their best player between him and Flagg this season. But I kind of feel like this is going to be a weird year for the Mavericks. I do think it's kind of similar to the Spurs. I think they're going to start off slow and then maybe kind of make a little bit of run and start putting things together in the second half of the season. But I really don't expect a lot from this team. And like I said, I could not believe how fat AD looks. I don't know what that is, what's going on there. But as a person who has a lot of respect for Anthony Davis, the dude won us a championship as a Laker. I've always respected him even before he was a Laker. I respected him when he was with the Pelicans, and I respected him when he was in college at Kentucky. So, like, this is a dude who I've always respected. And when I saw him rolling into training camp, I'm like, are you okay? Are you just been eating your feelings this offseason? Because, man, you don't look like you're in your basketball shape. Then finishing in fourth place in the Southwest Division, I have the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know what we're getting from this team. Ja is hurt. Edie is hurt. Jaren Jackson is hurt. And those are their top three guys. So good luck. And then finishing in last place, I have the New Orleans Pelicans because what are we getting from this team? Is Zion going to play? Is Zion going to be healthy? Is he going to complain? What are we getting? What are we getting from you, Zion? I don't know what the hell we're getting from you. They don't actually have a terrible roster. It's just they never put it together. They never do anything. So why the fuck would I believe in the Pelicans right now? Moving on to the Central Division and finishing in first place, I have the Cleveland Cavaliers. They have a really solid roster. I'm reading that they're thinking about trading Jarrett Allen, which I don't know why you would do that. Garland, he's still nursing his injury, so he may start the season off on the injured list. But other than that, I look at this roster. They look good. I don't think they've lost a step. I don't know why you'd want to trade away Jared Allen unless they're getting somebody really good. But I look at them and I think they're going to be one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. I actually think they could compete for an NBA Finals if they're as good as they were last year. So I don't know why you'd want to get rid of Allen, but maybe there's some type of turmoil that I'm not aware of. But I think he's a solid player, and I've always thought he was a huge piece to this puzzle. But so I think that would be a bad move, but you know, you never know what's going on there. But if they still have Allen, if they still have Mitchell and they still have Mitchell. Mitchell is an excellent player. Dude was playing at an MVP level last year. So he's the main reason why I still think this team's solid. I don't really expect them to lose a step. Plus the Eastern Conference, not a very good conference to begin with. So Cleveland should ride high, and they're not in a good division either. Finishing in second place, I had the Detroit Pistons. I think this team is legit. I think this is another team that I look at like the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder over the last few years, where they were terrible and they had to build through the draft. And now they've got their dude Cunningham. He's obviously the dude. He's the superstar. He's leading this team. And I just look at the Pistons as taking another step forward this year. I think they're going to be one of the top teams. I think really the only reason why I've got them finishing in second place is because I trust Cleveland more. I think they've proven it, that they should be up in first place. But hey, I would not be shocked in any way if the Detroit Pistons win this division. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to be close between these two teams for the most part. But I think Detroit's going to pick up right where they left off last year. I think they're going to be one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. And don't be shocked if you see them head all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. Finishing in third place in the Central Division, I have the Milwaukee Bucks. Because it's looking like Giannis is going to get traded this year. I mean, he hasn't been traded yet. He's not clamoring for it, but there's been already the Knicks have already said they offered a trade for him, and the Bucks didn't want to take it. And there's been a couple other teams that have said they've made some offers. So it's kind of looking like to me the Bucks are playing that game where they're going to see how the season goes. And if it's terrible, they're probably going to trade Giannis. And if they actually are able to hang in there, they're probably going to hang on to him. Because, I mean, Giannis is still an excellent basketball player. But I think he's just kind of, you know, wasting away in Milwaukee at this point, which is kind of what he's probably thinking as well. Not that he actually hasn't had any bad things to say about Milwaukee. It's just you could tell that that's kind of the way it's going. And so I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up somewhere else. I have no idea where he's going to end up, but I kind of feel like it just depends on how their season plays out. If he's there, I always give the Bucks a chance because, like I just said, the Eastern Conference, not that great. So, I mean, you just kind of have to play 500 ball and you can make the playoffs. And Giannis is easily 500 ball. I mean, you have him as your best player on the team. He's easily a player who's going to keep you at the 500 level. It's just everybody else around him I have a bunch of questions on. And so I kind of feel like he's going to get traded, at least by the trade deadline. Finishing in fourth place in the Central Division, I have the Indiana Pacers, and it's really just because of Tyrese Halliburton's injury. He's probably going to miss the entire season. I mean, he got injured in the NBA Finals, so usually an Achilles injury is taking you out the entire year. So I don't expect to see him at all this year. And even if we do, how effective is he going to be? So I just think that's going to be the Pacers' problem. They're missing their superstar player. They do have a solid team, but Halliburton is why you went to the finals last year. And then rounding out the Central Division, I have the Chicago Bulls because they have a terrible roster. There ain't shit going on this team. They suck. So have fun, Chicago Bulls, because it's going to be another long-ass season for you. All right, y'all, enjoy the week of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Wednesday.